there, everybody. It is Wednesday, April 25th, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us by dropping us an email and sending it on over to ken@thisshowisogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowisogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our little gay radio show that could. And of course, you gotta go to the Facebook. We know you have an account. Type in This Show Is So Gay. Like us, because we sure as heck like you. It is time to get started. Hey, first guest, are you ready to go?
I am ready.
That was awesome. Let's introduce you. Will Clark has been entertaining for the past 20 years, first as an actor in just a ton of films, then touring with his own one-man show, Altered Ego, and now as an MC and producer on over 1,000 events featuring LGBT celebrities raising money for LGBT nonprofits. Currently, he can be seen weekly at the Will Clark Show, which just underwent a huge change that we're going to talk about. His humanitarian work has been recognized with his receiving the Leo Ford Humanitarian Award and the Special Award for Achievement in AIDS Fundraising. And now he's back on our airwaves. Will Clark, welcome back to This Show Is So Gay.
Well, hello. How are you?
How the heck are you doing, sir?
I'm just terrific. I always love talking to you. You're so great. And I love the bio. It makes me sound like I've really done a lot with my life.
You have done a lot. And I had to cut it. I had to cut it down. It was like pages long. I'm like, I don't have time for this. We'll never have time to talk to you. That's the edited version. So you can leave this interview knowing, you know what, I've done even more than Ken said.
I have. Yeah, thanks a lot. The big change that you talked about or referred to or alluded to, as they say, was that we have moved the Will Clark Show featuring Pornabingo from Pieces on Christopher Street to our new location, new night, new time. It's like Sweeps. We have moved to the Ritz on West 46th Street near 9th Avenue on Thursday nights from 7 to 9.
I don't even know what the Ritz is.
The Ritz is a fabulous cracker.
Yeah, I've had that.
Yeah. No, the Ritz is this great bar. It's been around since, like, I think about 2005. It's three levels. There's always dancing and shows. Bianca Del Rio does a show there. Dallas Dubois does a show there.
We love Dallas Dubois, who's been on our show.
She was just my first guest. We had our first night at the new space last Thursday, the 19th. She was one of two guests that I had, and of course, she totally turned it out. She did Liza with a Z, and she's such a wonderful performer. And I have to admit, as a gay man, I don't have a big love passion for people who lip sync. I know that's horrible to say, to admit in real life. But I just sort of think that if I could actually do that, then I'm not sure, So you better have a really good gig.
You gotta have a good little shtick there.
You gotta have a good shtick. You gotta have a great outfit. And you really, really better be on point, unless the point is that you're just so trashed that you don't really care, which I've actually seen a couple of good ones do that.
Nice.
Yeah, Gusty Wins does a really great show where she kind of starts out and then she just kind of like says, "F*** it," halfway through, excuse my language. Hopefully you can beep that out.
We bleep it out.
Fabulous. And then Dallas did, she was so on point with Liza with a Z. She was just awesome. And everybody was entertained, as, we want people to be, because our show is part talk show, part game show, part variety show, and we do a lot of fundraising, so we're packing a lot into a two-hour show every Thursday night at the Ritz.
Now, why move?
Well, gosh, that's a great question, and I haven't yet really come up with the concise way to say it. So the best thing that I can say is that we loved being at Pieces.
Yeah.
It was really great. We had a wonderful run there. The staff was terrific. But we got into a place starting late last year where we've been there so long that you just sort of start going on autopilot.
Right.
And there's as with any venue, there are certain limitations, and I think we kind of had butted up against those limitations at some point, and I just felt that we were needing we needed to hit the refresh button.
Sure.
Probably the best way. And this one, and moving, I would prefer to have not moved nights, but the spot on Thursdays was what we were offered. And ultimately, I think that's actually going to be great for us to be a little earlier, completely change the vibe by a new space and a new night. I'm still referring to it in my mind sometimes as Wednesdays, Pieces, because it's really hard.
And what day is it now?
It's Thursday.
Yeah, stop calling it Wednesdays at Pieces. Neither of those is true.
I know, right? So, like, Wednesday night, this past week, Wednesday night, which was the first Wednesday I haven't worked.
Oh, wow. How weird.
It was so weird. I was like, I feel like I should be somewhere, but I don't have anything to do tonight. So it will actually open me up to being able to go to a lot of other events, which I've been missing for a long time. So Out Professionals, which is a group I belong to here in the city, which is gay and lesbian professionals. And they have a lot of great events on Wednesday nights, and I'm going to be able to actually go to some.
Now you can go.
Yeah, it's kind of neat.
Now, is the stage at the Ritz bigger than the stage at Pieces?
Well, both stages are a little small.
Yeah.
But thankfully, we do not have lots of people coming in with extra dancers and, you know, doing a big choreography.
Gotcha.
It's a really interesting space because it's the performance space, or the show space, if you will, is the dance floor. So there is a small stage. The DJ is right there on stage with us. We play a little forward, like off the stage, kind of on the main floor, but everybody else is sort of on bleacher seats, sort of. So we're still kind of trying to figure out, you know, sort of our mm-hmm. we're tuning the space, we're figuring it out. We have an 8-week commitment from the bar, so those kinds of things are things that we get to kind of hammer out and work out.
It's all going to work out.
Yeah, oh yeah. I mean, it's easy to figure out.
Because, you know, some people say that they grew up in Colorado or they grew up in Louisiana. I tell people that I grew up at the Boiler Room and at Pieces. It's kind of where my upbringing really happened.
That tells me a lot about you.
It tells a lot about me. I could deny it, but it's true. It was the Boiler Room, Pieces, and my first ever Nuts and Bolts, which isn't even there anymore.
Wow.
Right on the corner of 7th Avenue, and I don't know, there's a GNC there now. And by the way, GNC, if you're looking to sponsor this show, It's Okay, we're open to it.
Yes, and GNC, I'm open to you sponsoring the Will Clark Show.
There you go. There you go.
Give away little samples or something. I don't know.
I don't know if you saw this online. People have asked when I posted that you were coming back on the show. I was surprised how many people said, "Oh, can you get him to do Pornobingo here or here or here? Do you take the show on the road?"
You know, to be frank, that's great. I haven't seen that, and I'm thrilled for that. That was a very good Phyllis Diller, wasn't it?
It was. I almost thought she was here.
I know, right? I was channeling. But I dropped my cigarette holder. So. Yes, I do take the show on the road. I really haven't because I kind of got in this rut and where I kind of stayed on the island for – I stayed on the island for a long time of Manhattan.
Yes.
And as other New Yorkers will, I'm sure, tell you, when you stay on the island and all you do is on the island and all your friends are on the island – and you eat, drink, sleep, work on the island, years can go by and you suddenly go, oh my God, I haven't actually been off this island to do anything in like X number of years. And you realize this is why I'm exhausted.
Right.
And a little burnt out.
Yeah.
So I would love to take the show on the road.
I got a Vermont gig for you.
A Vermont gig. I'd totally love to come up there. I actually had a producer approach me a few weeks ago, and so far nothing's really come of it, but a few weeks ago about going to some bigger gay event type of things, destination events.
Okay.
And I don't want to name them because I don't know if they're going to come through. But it was an exciting and interesting and intriguing idea. There's some logistics issues which have to be sorted out, which
right.
is if I went on the road, am I taking people with me?
Right.
Or would I be utilizing talent that's there? And we'd have to figure out that. So,
yeah, I will say, Will, much like Celine Dion prefers to try out her acts abroad, you could really work out the kinks in Vermont.
I could work out many kinks in Vermont from what I hear in Vermont.
Moving on. So back to the island. This is a very big announcement that I just found out in our little pre-interview, and you didn't even know you were doing a pre-interview. I feel like we're making a huge announcement here in that are you not declaring your candidacy for the mayor of the island, the mayor of New York, on this show? That is what I learned.
Yes, I am declaring mayor.
This is very exciting.
Mayor of New York on this show. Is so gay.
Breaking news.
breaking news. Move over Christine Quinn. Move over Ray Kelly. Will Clark's going to challenge you all.
Christine Quinn doesn't respond to our interview request, but Will Clark is on the show, and he's got our vote. Of course, we can't vote there without suborning voter fraud, but that's okay. What is your platform?
My I can't believe you're bringing this up.
I do that.
My platform is that I live on 102nd Street on the west side.
Yes.
And I have believed for many years, and this is where I become Emperor Norton.
Love it.
San Francisco. This is where I suddenly go over the edge into my eccentricity. I believe that in a city that has 225 streets, Midtown is not in the 40s or 50s because that's not Midtown. Midtown is around 100th Street. That's where I live. So my platform is Morningside Heights becomes, which is just kind of a drab name anyway for my neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
We become the new Midtown.
All right.
We are the focus of Manhattan around 100th Street, and that is my platform. And only the 3,000 people that live in Morningside Heights would probably vote for me, but that's okay.
Yeah. A vote for Will Clark is a vote for a new Midtown, and that's not even a euphemism.
I know, right? It's not.
There's so many different directions we could go with that, but you're literally talking about a new Midtown. Who knew?
New Midtown. And it wouldn't diminish the current Midtown, because the current Midtown is Hell's Kitchen. It's Helsey. It's Broadway. I mean, all those things still exist, and they're all there. But then we get a new, important, you know, sort of identity.
Yeah.
We'll help property values and stores and all that kind of fun stuff. And I have a rent-stabilized apartment, so I'm fairly confident that my personal rents would not go up. So,
perfect. Well, I love when there's vested self-interest.
Selfish, you know. But, you know, I would move to Gracie Mansion anyway, so
of course.
It kind of wouldn't really matter for me. But
I smell a position of a houseboy for me. This is going to work out quite – that's a resume builder. Mom, Dad, if you're listening, trust me, it's a resume builder. It's a resume builder. Well, now, I bring this up. I bring up the mayoral piece, not because, you know, you told me to, because this idea of ambushing the guest during interviews, I was fascinated to read your blog after you were on this show and on another show, that your experience with interviews has not been altogether positive.
Oh, no.
And indeed, I did my research. On May 25th, 2010, a big day for the gay community, you wrote on one of your blog entries and said, I am never doing another interview.
Oh, my God. Wow. I you know, this is the problem with the internet age. Everything you say comes back to haunt you eventually.
I love that not only did you say, and I want to talk about both of these things, not only did you say that you're not doing another interview, but you were able to reconcile the series finale of Lost. And that was all in the same blog post.
yeah.
So I don't know which of those you want to talk about first, but...
I'll talk about the interview thing.
Yeah.
Look, I've had print interviews, I've had some radio interviews, and without naming names and going into details, because, you know, like, I don't need to do that.
Yeah, yeah.
There's just been people that are, some of them have people that I know for years who do an interview, and you read it, and it's like, how did you get that out of what I said? That's actually factually untrue, and not only just about my life, but about things I was talking about. You know, like in one case, I said, oh, I had worked for Aid for AIDS, which is this organization, which I'm not even sure if it still exists in LA. I'm pretty sure it does. I had done a lot of fundraising for them in the late 90s and created the Bad Boys Pool Party for them and everything. And I did this in a print interview, which will print online, a text interview, I should say. And the guy, you know, like I said, it's LA, this is the services they provide, here's the website, and the guy, like, actually didn't hear me and, like, went and did some research and found a different Aid for AIDS organization in another city, like, I think even in another country, and linked to that and, like, talked about that in the article, and I called him and I emailed him and I said, well, could you just change that? And he's like, oh, no, we don't change anything after it's been posted. And I was like, but it's, like, factually untrue. It's just whatever. And I know that's picayune.
Those darn facts.
Facts. You know, it's like Reagan said, facts. They're silly things.
Yes.
You know, I guess you get to a point where you're like, oh, I'm just frustrated. And late in I'm trying to remember when. I think this was later in 2010. I did do a radio interview after I had said that. And the interviewer seemed bounded and determined to grill me. And I was actually not well. I was in another city.
Okay.
And I was in the other city to be a judge for a contest. And I was not feeling well. I had gotten poison ivy like 8 weeks before that, and it was really, really bad. I had been doing some landscaping for a friend, and it was really bad. And so I was like on all these medication to stop the itching. And I almost didn't make the trip, and I thought, no. I made commitments. I should go.
Okay.
So I went, and I did this interview, and so I'm there, and I'm kind of sluggish, and I'm trying to, like, you know, be perky. And the interviewer started becoming a psychologist and analyzing me, and I was sort of like in a little bit of a haze, and I was sort of trying to be honest and truthful and direct without telling him that's none of his business.
Right.
What's wrong with you, you know? But he just seemed to be delightful to like just find stuff to pick on. And I walked out feeling really humiliated, and I sort of got to this point where I was like, okay, I'm not going to do that again. I just said I wasn't going to do it. Now I'm really not going to do it. But then last year I revisited that because I met you, and I did something for Leatherati, and I also did something for a friend of mine, DJ Baker, who has a hip hop radio show.
Nice.
Podcast, excuse me. And I, you know, it's one of those things where you say, I'm never going to do this again. And part of that is because there's a fear of looking stupid or being humiliated or being misquoted or, you know, all that kind of stuff. Or, you know, you listen to yourself and you go, oh, I sound so stupid. And just people, and that's really common with people, I suppose, right? I mean, I imagine you get that.
Every now and then.
Yeah. And, you know, it just comes from an insecurity and fear, all that stuff. So rather than let that fear kind of guide me and rule me and push me around and define me, I decided to take the bull by the horns, if you don't mind that cliche.
No.
And did DJ show, sought out the Leatherati thing, contacted you, and thankfully, fortunately, because I was more on top of stuff and because I was clearer about what I wanted to talk about in all three of those, and they were all such different things, and fortunately, all three things were run by people who were, you know, really very up and positive and great. All three came out really well, and I was very happy, and I felt confident about maybe doing interviews again.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so it really was a turning point, and certainly my last thing on your show was just so much fun because you're such a great interviewer, and, you know, you ask the fun questions that I can kind of bounce off of, you know. And a big cappuccino from Starbucks really helps as well.
Yeah, I find that – see, I was going to say if I find that it does, but everyone's going to know who listens regularly that that would be a lie. Do you know that I've never in my life tasted coffee?
Oh, my God.
I know.
Either until last summer.
Oh, really?
Really.
Look at us.
I know. We're like coffee virgins. Well, you're still a virgin. I've broken through. Let's not go over that analogy.
That's what I need, is listeners writing to me and saying that they want to deflower my coffee virginity. That's really what I'm looking for.
I broke up with my boyfriend of 4 years last summer.
Okay.
And I don't know, I was sort of like in this redefining mode for myself.
You know,
I don't know. And part of the interview stuff came out of that time as well, mm-hmm. I suppose. And I kind of had this mental list of, here's some things I've never done. Now, I don't need to really jump out of a plane or,
right.
you know, bungee jump off of a bridge. I don't really care, and I don't really want to do those things. I'm sorry. But, like, minor stuff, like trying coffee is something I can really do for really low expense and find out what that's like.
And?
And I started going out with somebody who made really, really great coffee, cafe au lait. And
also not a euphemism. This is great. Keep going.
Yeah. So I tried his coffee, not a euphemism, and his coffee was awesome.
Look at that.
Yeah, right. So I kind of have now developed this little habit of, oh, I'm awake. Oh, I like this. I like this being awake thing. This is right.
It's better than sleeping, some say.
Well, you know, you get a little older and things start to kind of feel a little fuzzy, and the coffee certainly defuzzes things a little bit. And it's cheaper than cocaine. So
okay. You did a cost-benefit analysis. Look how that worked out. That's
right.
Great.
And I don't have to replace my nostrils, you know, like in 10 years. So it's a really good thing. My feeling is that, you know, the gay community is that, you know, like all the people who have survived HIV/AIDS
mm-hmm.
will then later on have to have reconstructive surgery on their noses for all the meth and cocaine
yeah.
all through their lives, you know. Although I guess the smoking thing is a lot more popular, more trendy these days, but
it is. It is. Yeah. Well, and so speaking of HIV and AIDS and certainly fundraising around that, let's talk a little bit about fundraising.
Sure.
Now we had on, I don't know if you know, Jimmy Nguyen was on the show recently, and he wrote an op-ed for The Advocate just about how the gay community really isn't giving to even nearly its capacity for various causes. And then I, right before we went on the air, I'd read his op-ed, and I had in my inbox, I think it was like six, just from that morning, six different appeals from six different organizations. I'm actually starting to feel a little bit overwhelmed by the amount of fundraising and fundraising appeals that I get. I would actually rather go to, and I swear this isn't just a plug for you, I'd rather go to the Will Clark show. You know, I'd rather go and have a night out and do fundraising that way than get hit as much as I'm getting hit.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I mean, I believe in, and I've always believed in, give them something for their money, and then give them more. You know, everybody should win. People who pay money to go to the event obviously win because they get entertained and they get, you know, pictures or whatever they, you know, depending on the event. The performers should get promoted. The sponsors, you know, get possibly more customers. They get more exposure because they've suddenly got, you know, several at the bigger events, several hundred people that are exposed to that product or that sponsor, you know, through the gift bag or signage or whatever. And, you know, so everybody should win. And it's a little harder work to do that because it's easy, it's really easy to throw an event where someone or some portion of it is sacrificed, i.e., you know, you're eating rubber chicken and so you're like paying a bunch of money, but you're not actually having a real meal. I mean, you're sort of having a meal, but it's not that great.
Mm-hmm.
And people complain about that all the time.
But all the time.
You kind of roll your eyes and you sigh and you go, well, it's for charity and blah, 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 blah. And I really hope that no one says that at things that I do, because I hope that you're getting an entertainment value at the very least. And if you win bingo, for example, you're getting a bag that's probably about, let's see, it's got a DVD, a bottle of lube, usually a couple CDs. So, you know, in an extremely conservative place, you're getting about a $50 value peg, and I think that's very conservative.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And, you know, and I think, you know, if you've spent a couple dollars on bingo cards, that's a pretty good return.
Yeah.
You know, and then we have people performing and people talking about their fun, about their book that they wrote or a porn star stripping or something like that. In any event, as far as the multiple appeals, well, so many LGBT organizations are losing funding or have lost funding or a decrease in funding. And so I think they're stepping up their efforts to get the direct donation support from, you know, the people rather than going under. And I don't know that there's a solution for that because of the economic situation we're under in this country. You know, it's a very, like for AIDS organizations, I know that a few years ago, people had a headspace that they expressed to me, and I guess it was maybe 10 years ago. Now, when I was living in L.A. and doing the Bad Boys pool party, people expressed to me, well, I don't know that I want to donate money for an AIDS organization because does anybody really die from that anymore?
Oh,
and
my.
Do, you know, are they really using that other than for administrative costs? And, you know, that's a very fair question, and it's hard also for people to see a lot of people in our community doing drugs and also barebacking and kind of throwing that work that people like ACT UP and Queer Nation and other organizations did to keep us all alive. It's kind of hard, I think, for people with money in some cases, or at least it was at that time, to see the value in supporting an AIDS organization if everybody is just kind of having unsafe sex and not really caring that much. So, and I really get the conundrum, and it's a difficult, I mean, the whole HIV AIDS, safe sex, barebacking, donation, fundraising, are we a business that's making money? Are we trying to stay open, or is our business to end AIDS and therefore put ourselves out of business? It's an enormous ball of complications that nobody has yet figured out, and in 30 years of the epidemic, no one has really come up with an effective campaign to dissuade people, to both dissuade people from becoming positive and also at the same time not demonizing or criminalizing people who already have or get HIV.
Right.
So, and it's such a complicated thing, and there's thousands of people that work at a variety of AIDS organizations around the country and around the world. And if not one person in 30 years has really come up with, like, the answer, I'm
right.
not sure that the answer really works other than, hey, it's your body, try to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, and that seems incredibly simple, and in theory, it should be really, 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 really simple to protect yourself. But people aren't simple. People are complicated. People have passion, and they have the moment, and they say, and I know of people that have had con fatigue, where they're just like, I've had, say, sex for a couple of decades, I'm tired, I don't care anymore, I'll just be fine, it's no big deal, and you know, the meds will be fine, and I don't care. And I know people who are like, that's just crazy and suicidal, and I'm like, I don't think that's crazy. I think that's really, really, really human. I think it's just, it's people who know about cancer, but still, you know, smoke a pack or two a day.
Indeed.
And you know, like, you can say, oh, I can't understand that, but I think if you're working for an organization that services people who are at risk for cancer, or if you're a cancer organization and if you're an AIDS organization, you really probably should get kind of your head around, why are people self-destructive?
Right.
You should figure that out before you worry about anything else.
Before you even send out that fundraising appeal, you got to know the motivations that go in there.
Why is this still happening? Obviously, people have had bareback sex even before we called it that, since we knew about the epidemic, or the epidemic wouldn't continue.
Right.
And that's just a fact of life.
Right.
There's other modes of transmission, intravenous and et cetera. There's anecdotal things of, I got it from my dentist, you know, somebody bit me. You know, like, there's anecdotal, but it's not the majority of the transmission. And certainly the rate of transmission and the volume of transmission wouldn't be as high and as, you know, sort of lengthy if people in 1982, let's just pick a year, or 83 or whatever year, they determined that, you know, condoms by and large reduce or cut down the transmission. Then if everybody had kind of done that simultaneously, then nobody would have, we wouldn't have any new infections.
Exactly.
I mean, that's just where we'd have a lot fewer, excuse me, I should say that, because of the needles and everything.
We got more work to do.
It's a very tricky thing. You know, it's hard to, I think, appeal to somebody who has a bunch of money and say, I'm an AIDS organization, please give me money, because they'll turn to you and go, well, what are you what am I getting for this?
Right.
You know. So I think that's where you're getting a lot of bombarding, and you know, people are getting a little maybe desperate and a little scared for their budgets and their employees and their missions.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm happy that, you know, in the past when I was doing the Bad Boys Party, we were really clear about working for organizations or fundraising for organizations that gave direct aid to people. In AIDS for AIDS's case, they gave direct aid to people who were having trouble paying their bills. So everything we raised really went to, here's $1,000, please pay your rent, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's $1,000, please eat this month, you know,
right.
Because you can't afford it. And then we did stuff for L.A. Shanti, and they were really more on, this money will help us afford a counselor to help people, like, the day after they find out that they're HIV positive, they would go into that organization and get counseling, which I know is very, very, very important.
Yeah.
And that organization doesn't exist anymore, unfortunately. And, you know, research is still extremely valuable, but, you know, like, unless you're David Geffen and you're giving somebody $1 million or more, I really, you know. So what we do at Bingo is kind of like, we raise some money and it's really great, but I don't think that we're keeping anybody open. We are doing some grassroots. We're doing some team building. We're doing some fundraising. We're not calling it any of that. It's just kind of what happens. But that's like the technical definition of that from a fundraising point of view. Or like for our smaller organizations, and I'm talking about like a gay theater that we, you know, we've done fundraising for, or mm-hmm. a gay sports team. The $500 or $1,000 that we're going to raise in the evening, like for a sports team, will allow somebody who's on the team, who's maybe not of as high of income level as maybe their teammates, and allows them to, you know, buy an airplane ticket to go to Cologne for the gay games, for example, or when it's in Ohio, in Cleveland, in a couple of years, it probably will afford two people to get from New York to go fly round trip to Ohio.
It's a little cheaper there.
It's much cheaper than Cleveland than to Cologne. And I don't know why. It's crazy. I don't understand that. But
see how cheap it is to come to Vermont.
Well, that's just a drive. I'm to Vermont.
You can pull that. Hey, door to door from where you live there in the early 100s, that's a three-hour door to door.
Yeah.
And then you'll come up because I got to start my fundraising now. It's so funny because I'm trying to wrap my mind around this. I have my AIDS ride coming up in August, and specifically I'm doing an AIDS ride that I'm – all the miles that I'm pedaling are for a cure. They're not for direct services, and they go to organizations not for overhead in these organizations. So, but I also know that I'm going to be hitting up people who get hit up all the freaking time.
Right, right. And, you know, in fundraising with all this kind of thing, especially on like the AIDS right types of events.
Yeah.
You have to really vary your ask. You know, you can't
ask
people over and over again. You kind of have to vary it. I did the AIDS walk just as a participant for a few years. And I've kind of done it kind of spotty. I'm not one of these people that can say, oh, I did an AIDS walk every year for the last 20 years.
Right, right, right.
I've maybe done it a half dozen times because I feel like I'm kind of hitting people up 2 weeks a year in some ways. So, I do the AIDS walk every few years, or I comp it up in 2 or 3 years at a time, and then I don't do it for a while. And I won't do it this year, but maybe I'll do that next year.
Maybe you'll do it next year.
You know, it's a fun thing. I'm more of a, let's throw a party and raise some money.
Yes.
And then let's walk around the park 10 times. I'm just, you know, that's just not as exciting for me personally.
Right, right.
And the bike rides are great. But, you know, unless I know that there's a KFC at the end of the route, I probably don't know if I could ride the 300 miles.
I don't even think there is a KFC in Vermont, but that's okay. That's okay.
I know. Just, you know, you can buy some, ship it over, hand it in the house, you know, pipe the smell over to me, keep sending me text messages with little pictures on it of the block.
We'll set up the KFC for you outside the co-op, and then it'll be very Vermont-y.
Then it'll be very Vermont-y.
Very Vermont-y.
Well, to the compost hut.
Well, you can't not compost here. That's against the law. So we do have to talk about your music real quick because we're running out of time. And I don't even know these songs. And you provided them very off the cuff, which I love because this leads to some very serious self-analysis where you will tell our listening audience, as you did, Will Clark, what your musical selections say in the third person about Will Clark.
Oh,
you ready?
Well,
Wanted... Their song, Glad You Came, what does Glad You Came say about Will Clark?
I don't think the lyrics say really much of anything about Will Clark.
Okay.
But the instruments that are used sound to me a lot like the last couple minutes of the Return of the Jedi, the Ewok Village.
Nice.
It sounds like the music that the Ewoks were playing, and I believe it's the second version, not the first version, although they've kind of gotten mixed up in my mind. Because, you know, Lucas kind of did two versions and put new music on the second time around.
Yeah.
Which people were, like, enraged about. And I was like, oh, great, a second choice. I like that. And so it reminds me of that, and that makes me very, very happy. So that's really all it is with that. And,
all right.
You know, the guys are cute. So,
Well, that's important. It's important. Now, what about Broken Hearted? What does Cameron's Broken Hearted say about Will Clark?
Well,
I'm a little worried about this one.
You shouldn't read too much into that.
Do you need a hug?
I do need a hug.
Okay.
I always need a hug. All night long is my preference.
Okay.
But I will take one for just a couple minutes. I just love her hair in that because it looks so bizarre and odd and strange. And here's a very pretty young lady who can actually sing, but is kind of got this whole sort of, she's singing pretty poppy, and then she runs into a rap, and then she has all these like little sort of Tourette syndrome little asides, like cheerio, very good, you know, and it's totally spazzy, and you know, she's totally all and erratic and crazy, and she's all over the place, but yet it's somewhat controlled, and you just kind of worry about her a little bit because you wonder, you know, she's got like several different things happening at the one time, and I just want to give her a Xanax.
Nice.
But it is kind of a fun song, and I keep listening to it, and there's just something about it that's kind of endearing and fun, and I like her. I don't know her personally. But, you know, like the little cheerio thing. It sounds very fun. It sounds like something she's saying to her friends, you know, and it's an inside joke.
Love it. Love it. Let's do some quick word associations, and then we got to get you back to preparing for next week's show and your mayoral campaign. So quick, we'll do two very quickly. When I say Kirk Cameron, what do you say?
Oh,
you know, the funny part about that is it's going to be you say, ugh, and then bleep, which people will love. People will love that on the show. And then I think this will be fun for you. Quick word association, that girl.
Oh, me. I'm feeling very Marlo Thomas these days.
Do you?
I do a little
bit. I feel very Phil Donahue, so that's great. Great.
It's just, I love the whole image of, you know, sort of running around New York and being very enthusiastic about your life, and that's kind of where I'm at this moment. So.
I love the idea of standing in the aisles and putting my head down on the microphone. That's so, we're there. I'm there. It's my very Donahue moment. Just being frustrated with every answer that I get. But not from you, not from you. So now, where can our listeners go to learn more about all the cool things you're doing and your mayoral campaign?
Well, I will have to write a blog post about that. My website is WillClarkWorld.com. That's my name, world.com, W-I-L-L-C-L-A-R-K, world.com. And, of course, I have a Facebook page. I have my 5,000 friends.
You do? You reached your limit.
I've reached my limit a long time ago, baby. I really did. But
not touching that. Keep going.
But it's fun. You know, like now they've introduced this whole new thing where you can have subscribers, so you don't actually have to have, you know, you can have more subscribers than friends, but I don't even know why they even bother with any of that.
Yeah,
but,
it's silly. It's silly.
It's great. I mean, I have a hard time remembering names and faces, names with faces, so Facebook for me is perfectly invaluable. I can remember everybody's name and remember what they look like. It's a constant reminder. It's done wonders for my memory, so.
All right, so that when I show up there at the Ritz on a Thursday night, not at Pieces on a Wednesday night, you'll know who I am.
I will know who you are.
Awesome.
Because your show is so gay.
Isn't it just so gay? Will Clark, it is a pleasure as always. We just love having you on. And so for folks who wondered what that noise is, we'll leave it to your imagination. Will Clark, all the best in everything you're doing. So exciting about Thursday nights at the Ritz.
Me too. Thanks, Dan.
We'll see you soon.
Bye.
My universe will never be the same. I'm glad you came.
You cast a spell on me, you hit me like the sky fell on me, and I decided you look well on me, so let's go somewhere no one else can see you and me, turn the lights out.
All right, folks, and we are back. Jodelia.
Kenneth.
Much to discuss and not a lot of time.
Wow.
Much to discuss
right.
and not a lot of time. So let's get going. Very quickly, we mentioned at the end of last week's show this whole thing that's going on in Tennessee where they have the Don't Say Gay bill where it bans teachers from saying the word gay and it's really, really ridiculous.
Wow.
So we should all be happy to know that this has now expanded beyond the borders of Tennessee and has now gone into the land of Missouri, which I looked up, totally a state, part of the union.
Mm-hmm.
Missouri Republicans, borrowing an idea from Tennessee, have proposed a Don't Say Gay bill of their own. The Huffington Post reports that dozens of sponsors are signed onto the bill, including House Speaker Steve Tilley and Republican Majority Leader Tim Jones, House Small Business Committee Chairman Dwight Schamhost, offered perhaps the strangest reasoning for why Missouri needs a Don't Say Gay bill. He said, quote, "There is no need to talk about Billy wanting to marry a goat." In Tennessee, the law threatens teachers and school administrators with fines and jail time if they discuss homosexuality before high school. So we're keeping our eye on that. But to clear up any confusion about the Missouri version, sponsor Representative Steve Cookson issued a statement explaining that it applies to all discussion of sexual orientation, both homosexual and heterosexual. So he said it's an all-access, all-equality type
all
of bill.
All goats.
All goats all the time. So that's going on. All right. I want to turn to, although I want to cover this real quick, and it's okay. not a gay story, but I feel like it is a gay story, and then we're going to talk about the bulk of what I want to discuss with you.
Okay.
Amanda Doherty is a junior at a Catholic high school in Pennsylvania. Her junior prom date told her right before the junior prom, I guess a week before, that he wasn't able to make it. I don't know why. Let's assume that he is sick.
Okay.
I like assuming that.
Sure.
So now she has been told that she is not allowed to go to the prom because they have a rule that says you have to go with somebody else. So they've explained this.
Okay.
The Office of Catholic Education addressed this rule. This is what they said, quote, "The prom is an exciting event for students in all of our archdiocesan high schools."
Diocesan.
Whatever. "We do have policies." Is that really it?
Yes.
"Archdiocesan high schools." Very gay, very Jewish here. "We do have policies in place to regulate both the junior and senior prom. Unfortunately, not all students are able to attend. We can't address specific issues with specific students, but there are various reasons that a student would not be able to attend. Not having a date is one example. Our high schools offer numerous dances and events throughout the year where dates are not required, but we view the prom as a special social event where a date is required to attend." End quote. Can we assume that perhaps one of those special reasons is not going with someone of the same sex?
I would bet. I'd bet a large sum of money. That's
so for them to say that the prom is a special social event where a date is required to attend, I feel we can assume a date of the opposite sex is actually what they mean.
I think that's probably what they mean.
We normally don't take stories and then extrapolate them out into a story that isn't the story, but I feel we can do that for this one. So I will go with you to the prom. Amanda Doherty, if you want a date to the prom, I'm hereby, I wasn't even planning on going here. I am offering my services. They're not really services. I can dance. I will go to, I don't have a tux though. I don't even really have a suit, but I will rent a suit. Amanda Doherty, I will go to the prom with you if you need someone to go to the prom with. Wouldn't it be great if I ended up going to the prom with Amanda Doherty?
That'd be really fun.
I would love it. She's already bought her $95 ticket. Amanda, I will reimburse you for that $95 ticket. And she spent an estimated $1,000 on her dress. Amanda, I am not even helping you out with that at all. But I will reimburse you for the $95 ticket, and I will go to the prom with you. So there you go. Jody doesn't even remember her prom date's name. Just want to put that out there.
It's true. I don't. It's
yes,
terrible.
You do.
I mean, I remember last name, but I don't remember his first name anymore. I feel really badly about that.
Wait a second. You remember his last name, but not really his first name?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Because if you were Jen, I would assume it was Lars, but you don't even know if she went to the prom. Have you done your homework on that?
She actually, here's the thing. They had like a senior dance. It wasn't like prom. But
okay.
They did have a big thing. And I don't, because it was an arts high school, I don't believe you had to have dates. Like people went in big groups and it was all arts and fun and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
She went with Sven.
With Sven.
Can't you assume? I assume she went with Sven.
You know, she's never mentioned a Sven. Lots of Olies out there, though.
That's something I've never said. All right. Now, here's the bulk. Here's the bulk of what I want to talk about. And let me lay out the context for you. Because there's a couple different things that are contributing to my crazy state of mind with this.
Okay.
And I will admit, crazy state of mind.
Okay.
So, first, the quote that we will be playing for everyone, and you'll know by the voice, will be coming from Newt Gingrich.
Okay.
All right. Now, part of the context is that ACT UP is celebrating their 25th anniversary, which is pretty cool. More than pretty cool, of AIDS activism. They are going to have a march down to Wall Street. Newt Gingrich's quote has absolutely nothing to do with ACT UP.
Okay.
But it's just here. So part of my thinking is, all right, ACT UP, they have radical actions and they're fantastic, celebrating 25 years of really kind of impressive actions. So there's that piece.
Yeah.
There's Newt Gingrich, which is a piece.
Yes.
And now a new piece, which is not when he said this statement that we're going to play. He is now, since I don't know if you heard this, he just today is dropping out of the race.
Oh, I could have predicted that.
So there's that.
Okay.
Here, Newt Gingrich had this 4-minute quote when he was in North Carolina. And here is part of his quote that I will play for you right now.
"Marriage between a man and a woman is at the heart of our civilization. It's a belief that is now under attack, and yet it's at the very core of defining who we are. That's why I urge you to vote for the initiative right here in North Carolina, the chance to vote for a referendum to declare clearly that marriage is between a man and a woman. This is part of the same great process this year that's involved with President Obama and that's involved with the whole danger of what's happening to our basic beliefs. There's an effort by radicals at every level to change who we are, to change what America is, and to change for our children into a future that I think will be much worse. This is your chance to turn out and vote, and to vote for preserving America, and to vote for preserving a very basic institution. I look forward to your help. Together, we can ensure that conservatism remains the key to America's future.
Okay.
Okay.
Any initial off the cuff before I delve in?
Well, I can't say I'm shocked he would say something like that. It's very him.
Okay. Now, let's also talk about who him is.
Yeah.
I'm not even going to go near the whole, there's an irony that he's talking about marriage,
right,
that he's been married four times,
yes,
six times,
yes.
eight times, something
so,
like that.
A lot of times.
I'm not talking about that, and I'm not interested in that. I am interested in the fact that he's a national figure who, yes, he dropped out of the race. Mm-hmm. He didn't drop out of the race with zero support.
Right.
He's got a ton of support.
Mm-hmm.
Millions of dollars people have contributed. This
yep.
is not some fringe guy
right.
who is not in the public consciousness.
Right.
Okay. So that's part of it.
Okay.
I was pulling into my driveway yesterday, which used to be
my driveway.
Your driveway.
Yeah.
Because we share here in
yeah.
the Vermont.
Yeah.
So I was pulling into the driveway, and the little blossoms were raining down. By
yeah.
the way, you absolutely didn't mention that that was going to be a piece of living there.
Oh, yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll be on your car for the next few
yes,
weeks.
I was going to say, it's not lovely. I can't get them off my car. But that's not the point.
Car wash.
Car wash. So I was pulling into the driveway,
yep.
and I don't know what I was listening to. I think I was listening to, it must have been to the Tom Hartman show or some sort of liberal talk radio of some mm-hmm. sort. And I started thinking that I don't even want to talk about anything else on this show anymore. I don't even want to talk about complexity. So I'm, let me back up even a step further. People are going to have a hard time following my train of logic on this, so I'll try, but you might not. It's okay. Listen
okay.
in next week. We talk about really cool things on the show, and
yep.
I enjoy that, and I think we talk about complex issues, and I think that
yep.
we add complexity to the issues that we talk about, and
right.
they're so nuanced of education and HIV and AIDS and trans issues, and I like that we cover all of these different levels of LGBT issues.
Right.
As I was pulling into the driveway and these things were raining down on my car and I couldn't get them off, I was thinking, I don't even want to do that anymore. What's the point? How are we able to talk about complexity, which in some way implies that we get past the conversation of, oh, and I know this is really basic,
mm-hmm.
oh, I pay taxes and I don't have the same rights as everyone else. How do we have any conversations on this show,
mm-hmm.
anywhere else, that get past the part that you and I are not equal citizens as our heterosexual neighbors? How do we talk about anything else? How is that not something that everyone is up in arms over? And we talk about, you know, we add nuance and we talk about proms and we talk.
Mm-hmm.
How do we get past the basic fact that we are not equal to those around us? We do not have the same tax protection. Look, I know this isn't like, oh my God, Ken came up with a new argument. No, this is as basic of an argument as it gets.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, yesterday, pulling into the driveway, I was thinking, I almost think we shouldn't talk about anything else other than, hi, I don't have the same rights as you. How do we? I don't know. I mean, it seems so basic and so stupid and so silly, right? But I couldn't get past that. Like, why am I talking about other things? Every week, you should just turn into This Show Is So Gay. We'll play some Indigo Girl songs and some Girly Man. And also, I'm going to tell you that we don't have the same rights as everyone else. And then you would stop listening after 2 weeks because it gets old, and I get that.
Right, right. And because we need the nuance, because we need the complexity to bring the more of a face, more of an identity to the whole issue. It's the same thing as it, we could compare it with any other rights issue for a minority, anything. We can say the same thing about race. We can say the same thing about polar bears. We can say the same thing about any other group, saying it's really simple. This group is oppressed. The earth is dying. Period.
Well, I was going to say polar bears are oppressed.
Actually, they are.
They are. Yes.
They are oppressed. But it's very simple for all of those things. But if we don't tell the story, if we don't tell the nuances, then there's less of a chance that people are actually going to be able to process that. They're going to just feel like overwhelmed with, wow, that sucks. I don't know what I can do about it.
Why? Why do you, I don't even understand. I'm at this point right now where I don't even understand why it needs to be humanized anymore. Why is it that you can't just get up and say, I don't have the same rights as you, and that not be the be-all end-all argument?
Because humans don't work that way.
I am not an equal citizen to the standing that you, my heterosexual neighbor, hold.
Correct. I mean, yes, to the other heterosexual neighbor who is not sitting in front of you, because I'm not that person. I equally have not the rights. Yes, that was...
Wait, isn't that crazy, though? We don't have the same rights.
Correct.
Do you... I would like us to wake up every morning and think that. But I would argue that there are any number of mornings that you and I wake up and don't think, oh my God, we don't have the same rights as other people. Now, tax season, if we're on our way to a wedding, God forbid a loved one gets sick, mm-hmm. these things come up.
Right. Baby
Much
showers.
Less baby showers.
They really come
Look
up.
At that.
At least for me anyway. They really come up.
Now, again, we could go back into the whole, I think they come up even less for you and I because we're in Vermont. And
right.
I do firmly yep. believe that. I think we're yep. in our little utopia and it,
we are.
It's an enabler. Vermont is an enabler for us to not think about these things as much. So there's that.
Mm-hmm.
But shouldn't we be waking up every single morning and thinking, oh my God, I don't have the same rights as everyone else? Sometimes I'm at work mm-hmm. and a heterosexual person disagrees with me and I feel like we should say, well, but that's not even true because I don't have the same rights as you. Okay, I don't think that, but I just feel like it should come up in every, it should be a mind-blowing thing in every conversation. It is mind-blowing. And I don't know why it's mind-blowing today and it wasn't last week because I certainly pay attention. I don't know if you know this. I have a gay radio show. I talk about these things.
Indeed. Quite a bit, yes.
But for some reason, right this second, on Wednesday, April 25th, 2012, 4 years into doing the show, for some reason yesterday and talking about it today, it is mind-blowing to me that people will tell me complaints about their personal lives, and I just want to say to them, wow, that's terrible. Did you know that I don't have the same rights as you have? I actually pay the same taxes as you, and I don't have the same rights. And I don't like the whole argument that it's only connected to taxes, but that is a piece of it. That's the whole taxation without representation, but, you know, I don't live in D.C. Yeah. So, I don't know. Okay, let me pause here and say, I have not presented a nuanced argument. I have not presented an original argument. I know this. I just, for some reason, right this second, am completely overwhelmed by it. And I feel like in some ways we've gotten away from reminding people of the basic fact that we are not equal. I don't know what you do with that. Send us an email.
Yeah.
Ken at thisshowisogay.com. And I don't want people to wake up and be incapacitated.
Right. I mean, because that's one of the possibilities. Because if you do, and I'm going to go back to saying that about any of the bigger issues, any of the things that are either evils, going as far as saying this is an evil done to a group of people or to the environment or to institutions that support any of those things. When you think about it in those big terms, it becomes insurmountable. You can't even think of, like, how on earth do I do anything with that at all? It's this huge thing. There's all these systems and red tape, and there's groups with lots of money, and I don't have any of those things. I don't even know. Why am I even here? Why do I even bother? And that's
God,
why.
God, now I'm feeling even worse.
And this is why we don't wake up every morning going like that. Because otherwise, we'd be a lot more depressed and incapacitated. We have to take it piece by piece. And each little story that we're able to grasp onto and even have a victory in or gain access to understanding it better, like, oh, you know what? I get that even better now. I could do something about that little thing. That one little thing. Or I know a person who does a thing about that particular issue. I'm going to go talk to them about that piece. That's how we chip away at it. And every so often, you get a group like ACT UP who does a major thing to push everything forward hugely. And that's great when that happens, but that can't happen all the time. At least it traditionally
doesn't.
Look
how you tied it back to ACT UP. That was really good because that was part of my concept. Yeah, and again, I was having a conversation with someone who works in a health center.
Okay.
In a health center,
yep.
Who did not know until I told him earlier this week that gay men cannot get blood. So I know that we have to keep talking about these things because there's
absolutely
awareness that doesn't happen. But
right.
I don't know. And look, I do appreciate – I don't identify with being an oppressed group. And I think it's really dangerous in some ways for me to go much down that. So I am a white, gay, Jewish male living in southern Vermont with – quite a decent paying job.
Right.
And so I want to be really careful in not, I struggle with some of the comparisons to civil rights era work, but at the same time, I don't have equal rights. It's just crazy.
Right. Right.
I just, every now and then it just hits me, and not really every now and then, for some reason yesterday it hits me. It's crazy. And I know, look, you have a better perspective than I do. And look, I'm 15 years younger than you. So you have the experience of, just life. Because you're like, what, 18, 19 years older than I am. And so I just, when I get to your age, I think that this is fun.
Yes, me and my wise years.
You have all of those years.
Those many years.
Of just, you know, being a lesbian. So, I don't know. For some reason, I want to rename the show from "This Show Is So Gay" to "This Show Is So Does Not Have Equal Rights." I don't know. I'm just really overwhelmed by it. And I wish you were tuning in, folks, and hearing, and because I know a lot of you tuned in to hear Will Clark, and we adore Will Clark. And so it's your first time listening to the second half of the show. And I swear we do present quite nuanced arguments normally. But for some reason today, I am at square one. And I think that you, listener, if you have not told someone in the past 24 hours that you do not have the same, if you are indeed gay, because we love our allies and keep on listening.
Yeah.
If you indeed identify as LGBT and you have not told someone in the past 24 hours that you do not have the same rights as they do, you should. And tell them your story and humanize it. But I think we actually do need to remind people we are at the place where there's some great stories out there. And Brian Sims is going to be the first out gay legislator in Pennsylvania, which is a huge deal,
That's great.
And so I love these victories. But I think we also do have to remind people, yes, he will be. He also will not have the same rights as all of the other legislators in Pennsylvania. So it's a victory and success. But holy cow.
Yeah.
He can't visit his partner in the hospital. I don't know what the laws are in Pennsylvania.
Right,
he can't. All the different things. Funeral taxes. All those things. He does not have the same rights as everyone else sitting around them. I don't know. It's not nuanced. It's just kind of where I am right now. What a fun attitude to end the show on. Because that's what's about to happen. All right. So if you have opinions on that, drop us an email. Ken@thisshowisogay.com. You can check out theshowisogay.com and learn all about our upcoming guests because there's fun things coming up on the show. And go to the Facebook and like us because we like you. And I love it. I love seeing that number go up. And I love that the people that I don't know like the show. I don't know. I'm also at that very basic point. I just feel like I should know every single person who listens to the show. And so when people click like and I don't know who they are, I think it's the coolest thing ever. Also, I don't have equal rights. So... go do amazing things. Go have conversations with other people. It's really important to have conversations with other people. It's the only way things are going to change. Mm-hmm. You can't just stew about it in a sound studio at a college. You actually have to talk to other people. So do that. Go do amazing things. And while you're doing them, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay?